Mary from New Hartford.
Hi.
Let her rip, baby.
How are you?
Just fine.
I just want to say, I heard you say the word Jesus.
Yep.
And he never said anything about the gays.
This is
true. Don't you remember, or have you read the Bible?
I sure have read the Bible.
Sodom and Gomorrah.
Honey, okay, what about Sodom and Gomorrah?
You know, if you read the Bible, yeah, you'll know what is wrong and what is right.
Okay, now, what did Jesus have to do with Sodom and Gomorrah, though? What I said was Jesus never says anything about Sodom
and
Gomorrah.
All the Bible was written by the apostles, and they quoted what Jesus had said.
No. The Old Testament was written before any of the Sodom and Gomorrah. Just settle back, possibly, you know, more than hundreds of years before the apostles ever lived.
Uh-huh.
Okay, that's number one. Number two, in fact, even the New Testament wasn't really written by the apostles, but that's a whole separate issue.
Have you been reading the Bible?
Absolutely. I know the Bible backwards and forwards. And believe me, Jesus never says anything about homosexuality. He makes only one reference to Sodom and Gomorrah. And when he does, he's talking about the cities of Bethesda and Capernaum, and he's talking about how they won't seem to accept salvation, they won't seem to accept his word. And he says something like, it's more likely that Sodom and Gomorrah will be resurrected on the judgment day than that these guys will ever pay any attention. I may not be nailing the citation exactly. He says something along those lines. He uses Sodom and Gomorrah as kind of an example of, you know, even Sodom and Gomorrah have a better chance of coming back than these two stupid cities. But that's his only reference to Sodom and Gomorrah. Now, another thing that you need to know, if you really want to play the Bible game with those of us who know how to play it, is that even the story of Sodom and Gomorrah, it's not really clear what that means. I mean, what their actual sin is. I mean, if you actually read the text pretty carefully, if you get out Genesis 19 and look at it, it's not clear that homosexuality is what's being talked about. It's at least as possible that what they're really talking about is kind of A, a lack of hospitality, and B, sort of the treatment of strangers in general. I mean, there's a crowd outside Lot's house who want, and they seem to want to do bad things to these strangers, and maybe even want to rape these strangers. But I think what's significant there is that Lot offers his virgin daughters to this same crowd rather than allow his guests to be harmed in this way. Well, if the people outside are, very strictly speaking, homosexuals, offering one's virgin daughters would be kind of a strange thing to do. So, I mean, it's really not even clear what the story of Sodom and Gomorrah means. But even if it's all about homosexuality, you should know that Jesus never talked about it. And he never talked about homosexuality at all. And it's also not true that the entire Bible was written by the apostles.
Well, not in that word, just like the word abortion. That was not written either. But too bad you didn't get down to the Marriott Hotel last week.
Well, maybe not, but it's too bad that you didn't. You might want to crack open that Bible one of these days. And actually, another interesting thing to talk about someday is who actually did write the New Testament. The books of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, the gospel writers, there's a substantial body of scholarship that suggests that none of those people ever laid eyes on Jesus, and that they aren't the disciples. In other words, they aren't, they weren't among the original 12 disciples and stuff. Most of the gospels appear to have been written, you know, maybe 40, 50, 60, 75 years after the death of Jesus.
I'm surprised you know so much about theology. I didn't realize that you were so informed.
Well, I was the religion writer for the Hartford Courant. Before that, I took classes at the Yale Divinity School. Yes, and before that, I took classes at the Yale Divinity School.
Uh-huh.
And
my cousin went to Yale.
Yeah.
At one time, he said he was never going to marry a Christian.
Yeah.
And my aunt said, well, then I will never go to a wedding. As it turned out, he married a girl who was so Christian. And Yale, he was getting all that at Yale because Yale is very, very liberal. You know that.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. They filled my head with that kind of stuff.
I'll bet.
And as a result.
All the isms.
Yeah.
You probably studied that too. Huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's certainly nice of your aunt. It's certainly a Christian attitude of your aunt. She wouldn't go to the wedding if he married somebody.
He married a Christian, right?
Yeah.
It turned out she married a girl. He married a girl who was the daughter of actually her grandfather. You heard of the Hauptmann case.
And did she ever give up being an intolerant
Never.
Bigot?
She had six children.
Oh, good. Well, listen, it was great talking
Wonderful.
To you, all right?
Yep.
Call okay. again, will you?
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye. It's a wonderful family they have. Oh, that was great.
great.
I like talking to men.
I know you don't.
Yeah. See, the thing is, I'm
the one that's going to be the Christian evangelist.
I'm not a particularly religious person, but I do kind of know what's in the Bible. And most people who claim that they're religious, I mean, evangelicals really know what's in the Bible. I mean, for example, Susan Campbell from the Hartford Courant was brought up in the evangelical Christian church, and I'm never going to win an argument about the Bible with that girl because she knows her Bible backwards and forwards. You know, Lutherans, you know, a lot of them, man, they really read that Bible. But Catholics often haven't read the Bible. Mary's Catholic. Catholics often have only sort of a passing understanding of the Bible. And they think, for example, that Jesus somehow or other told the story of Sodom and Gomorrah, or that that story appears in the New Testament or something like that. And there are sort of lots of other mainline denominations where they don't pick up the Bible all that often. Man, those evangelicals, though, they will kick your butt with it. I mean, that's what an evangelical is anyway. That's somebody who basically regards the Bible as a literal basis for all religious behavior.
Shifting gears.
Uh-huh.
Shifting gears.
Oh, yeah. Shifting gears considerably.
Yeah.
Joining us now, I don't know whether she's boots on the ground here in Connecticut or still out in western Pennsylvania, or she just woke up and she's not sure where she is, but Patty McQueen is with us now. Hi.
I think I just woke up and I don't know where I am.
Yeah.
Lui qui est comme un melon, lui qui a un gros nez, lui qui sait plus son nom, monsieur, tellement qu'il boit.
Well, 4 days after he was introduced as the Arizona Diamondbacks manager in Major League Baseball, Wally Backman was fired today following revelations he was arrested twice and struggled with financial problems. He was immediately hired by the University of Colorado. Said, we'll find something for him to do. He's our kind of guy. It's time for Sport d'Artois, the very French sports discussion segment of Mr. Crispino, Mr. Stephen, and myself, Louis Gastonier.
With the crowd chanting, four more days. Four more.
Plane and particles.
Right.
So I would put the money into an experiment where we shrink Raquel Welch and several other people down to the size of quantum particles, then move them around to quantum teleportation, and then bring the whole thing up to full size. But yeah. I don't think there's any point in trying to teleport people who are full size.
Right.
I think shrink them, make them really
shrink
little.
Shrink them,
make them really
shrink wrap kind of deal.
And then we can move them around much more easily.
That's probably a good point.
Get them quantum sized. Remember that movie where they all shrink down?
No, Honey, I Shrunk the Kid.
No. The Fantastic Voyage, Raquel Welch is the one that
Okay.
And they get inside and they get inside like a DeLorean and they're just inside somebody's body.
Right.
Remember that?
How could I not forget? How could I forget?
I had dreamed, actually, that Raquel Welch was driving a DeLorean in my aorta. To make that whole thing work. One thing that we're missing here, or it seems like we probably will miss anyway, is the 2004 World Toilet Summit, which is starting November 17th. And it's in Beijing, China. You still have time to make travel plans, I guess. They're bringing together some of the top toilet experts in the world. And one reason is that they're trying to clean up the capital of China before the 2008 Olympics. So they're having a three-day summit expected to attract 150 academics, sanitation experts, toilet designers, and environmentalists from 19 countries as far flung as the United States, Finland, Germany, Japan, and Nepal. And the topics will include the latest toilet technologies, management strategies, and self-sustaining commodes. I wonder what a self-sustaining commode actually is. And catheterization is nowhere actually on the agenda, but it certainly is another part. Maybe that's what a self-sustaining commode actually is. And apparently part of the problem is that China's public restrooms are basically open trenches. And then there's the other problem that people actually walk around in what are called split crotch pants, and they just pretty much go in the streets when they have to. Because really, if it's just an open trench anyway, why make the effort to walk all the way over to it? Anyway, so that's something that you can look forward to. And it would be interesting to know who the 150 scholars... I mean, I happen to work at Trinity College part-time, and I'm not aware that there is a whole toilet studies department. But then there's a lot of things that go on in that Jacobs Life Science Center that I'm not aware of. All right, joining us now is... there's so many. Well, Ron's been waiting a while.
Thank you, Bob. Matthew Wire, WTIC 1080 News.
Ladies and gentlemen, America's warrior poet, William Shatner.
I was crossing the snowfields in front of the Capitol building. It was Christmas, and I was alone. Strange city, strangers for friends, and I was broke. As the carolers sang its song, I dreamt of success. I would be the best. I would make my folks proud. I would be happy. It hasn't happened yet. It hasn't happened yet. It hasn't happened. Yes, there are nods in my direction. Clap of hands. A knowing smile. But still,
I'm scared again.
Foot slipped. Pebbles fall, and so did I. Almost.
I'm high.
On Yosemite. The big gray wall.
Fearful.
Where to put my foot next?
This
is there. I'm afraid I'm going to fall.
Here's one of them out.
I whispered in the air.
The new Indy Fleischman commercial, actually.
When do I feel I have a
It hasn't happened yet.
Maybe it should be the new Bill Curry.
It hasn't happened.
It hasn't happened yet.
It hasn't happened.
All right. Well, we're here, and John Larson will be joining us later. He also appears on the new William Shatner CD. Has Been is what it's called. Not that John Larson is a has-been, but that's what William Shatner's new CD is called.
Has-been.
Has-been, yeah. Done in conjunction with the great Ben Folds. All right, we'd like to begin here. We don't want to begin here, but...
Why does a person record something like that?
Actually, a number of us are haunted by this CD. You know, actually, my copy I got courtesy of Bill Heald, who's now obsessed about with the William Shatner CD. There's just like a fine razor's edge between really, really stupid and really, really cool.
Apparently.
And Bill is balanced there right now. I mean Bill Shatner, not Bill Heald. But actually both of them, to tell you the truth.
You don't hear that a lot. Bill Heald and balanced in the same sentence.
No. Except on a razor's edge. Well, controversy, meanwhile, in Bill Heald's hometown, or near Bill Heald's hometown, Houston, Texas, controversy mars the 30th annual International Quilt Festival. We may need a guest about this. I don't know. The Quilt Festival.
The Quilt Festival?
Okay, how many people would you say show up for the Quilt Festival?
Oh, thousands, I'm sure.
52,000 people annually show up for the International Quilt Festival. I believe it is actually the biggest tourism event that Houston has. Houston is like the fourth biggest city in America. But controversy has struck. Because the top prize of the festival, which is, as I just pointed out, one of the largest and most prestigious quilt contests in the world, is going to a hand-painted quilt. And that's why I wanted you to weigh in on this, because I know
a
that you
hand-painted
come,
quilt.
You come from a long line of, of Yankee quilters.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
The winning quilt, called Precious Water, looks more like a painting or tapestry than grandmother's finest handiwork, according to some. And for those unaware or just unaccepting of quilting's latest techniques, this year's Best of Show is causing some controversy. It's gorgeous, but is it a quilt?
I didn't really know that you were such a quilting person.
I'm not. I know next to nothing about quilting. That's why I'm bringing this up with you. I know that you're... The women in your family were artisans, quilt makers.
Oddly enough, that actually is true.
And,
What do you want to know?
Well, I want to know whether you think that's a quilt or not, if it's hand-painted.
What difference does it make?
Well, what's your definition of a quilt?
I don't know that I have an actual definition. What, you mean something that's sewn together out of various pieces of
Yeah, the question is, I mean, if you're going to paint onto the quilt, now there is apparently a movement within quilting. There's a growing movement to play more with paint, whether it's watercolors, dyes, or oil, and tell stories or even make political statements. Because that's the thing. I mean,
well, what do the rules say?
Well, the rules are a little fuzzy on this, I think. This is a message quilt, too. It actually draws attention to the worldwide shortage of water. It was done by textile artist Hollis Chatelaine. She dreamed of a yellow quilt about droughts that threaten much of the planet. And the process of making the quilt took her 2.5 years. And she made drawings based on photographs. She enlarged her drawings, transferred them onto cotton cloth, painted them with yellow dyes, and then machine quilted over the image with 200 colors of thread. So it's a pretty impressive thing. But the question is, does it violate the fundamental concept of quilting? I mean,
well, is there a governing body? Is it the international?
Well, there's the American Quilters Society.
What do they say?
And there's also the International Quilt Association.
Well, we could only hope for the two of them to get into a squabble.
Now, usually, if you have the championship belt from the International Quilt Association, you can't also be a champion within the American Quilters Society. They don't get along all that well. There's just some question about this. The judges considered awarding the best of show to a traditional quilt, but they love the impact, emotional appeal, and workmanship of this Chatelaine painted quilt.
Mm-hmm. It sounds beautiful.
Yeah, it does sound beautiful.
Sounds exquisite.
So your feeling is, open up the frontiers of quilting.
Well, it's not up to me, but yeah.
Well, let's say it were up to you.
Yeah,
you'd say yes.
Open it up. Well, yeah, but there had to be some kind of an understanding beforehand that this would be allowed. I mean, if the other people were all going under the understanding that you can't do this kind of thing, then that really wouldn't be very fair now, would it?
Yeah, except that there is apparently a movement within quilting to do this. This is not unprecedented in the world of quilting. And I guess there must not be any abiding rule. Although this has come up in the past, and in fact, the first time a machine-quilted entry won Best of Show in the American Quilter Society show in Paducah, Kentucky in the early 1990s, judges of that show later received hate mail. I don't know whether it was quilted hate mail or not, but it was...
So you can make a machine, you can make a quilt by using a machine? That doesn't seem very fair.
I'm assuming we're talking about some kind of sewing machine or, you know, yeah, you may not have to hand sew the quilt, I don't know. It turns out quilting, the whole quilting world, competitive quilting, it's rife with inconsistency.
Apparently.
Yeah, and a lot of loopholes.
Yeah.
It's like gymnastics.
Maybe they'll have to give back the gold, you know, the first place award.
I know Paul Hamm had to give back his quilting award earlier this year.
See, I think about those Russians and Canadians.
Yeah, maybe in a judging error of some kind.
Do they have, like, team quilting?
Not team quilting that
I mean,
I'm
like,
aware of.
You know, pairs?
Yeah, quilting bees they do, but...
quilting pairs,
yeah.
Perhaps.
Actually, I believe in this particular competition, in which, by the way, more than 800 quilts are entered, only 403 go before the top judges. There's a cut. It's like golf.
Uh-huh.
Only 403 make the call.
How long do you think it'll be before this is featured on one of the cable networks? You know, you get the dog shows are on. Competitive quilting.
I'm amazed it's not
so many, so many cable channels, you know, they got so much time to fill up. I can't imagine it would be too long before this would be featured.
Except that I think to be successful, it would have to be a show in which people were allowed to bring in all of the crappy quilts they have at their house, and people would sit around telling them how much money they were worth.
You could do that.
That whole Antiques Roadshow thing is really popular, mm-hmm. I think partly because it plays into the idea that people have that all the junk sitting around their house is actually secretly valuable.
Right.
Either that or they enjoy watching the hopes and dreams of other people be crushed when those people are told that the junk in their house isn't intrinsically valuable.
Uh-huh.
So there'd have to be some aspect to that. If we were going to produce a quilting show, which I don't really have time to do right now, but...
Well, I realize that you're far too busy for that.
I'm busy partly because I really am working hard, and this would be kind of a commission thing for me. In other words, I would get 5 to 10% of the action on this.
On the action of what?
Bringing Arafat to Foxwood. The whole idea is, okay, Arafat dies, nobody really wants him.
Do you really think that this is a good idea?
And
getting into this again?
So nobody wants him. So the idea was that he'd go to Foxwoods, and they'd maybe set up some kind of little special room. And for example, like the tablecloth and napkins would be based on his head
dress. Oh.
And then you have waitresses called the Gaza Strippers. Bienvenue, say hello. When you meet the PLO, let's meet
at Yasser's tomb in our new West Bank room.
Don't laugh at him. It just encourages it.
It's that kind of
thing. It's actually very creative, but... Yeah.
Well, my feeling is, you know...
I think I just saw Mr. Salhaney strolling back to his office. I'm sure he'll be there positioned to answer his phone.
Well, you know how at Fox News they have all those Asian table games and nobody except the Asians playing them know what they are? Well, you could... I mean, if they're... I would assume there is a game like that in the Middle East. In other words, they probably have their own table games. And nobody really knows how those work either. If there aren't those, make them up.
Make them up. Yeah.
Make up some game.
Make up
pretend it's this incredibly traditional game from, you know, from the Middle
East. So you're suggesting a game based upon Arafat somehow.
Well, no. I mean, that would just be... Arafat would be the draw.
He would be the draw.
It's like how Willie Mays used to be a greeter at certain... Well, Arafat would be the greeter, except that he'd be dead.
Kind of like Weekend at Arafat.
Yeah. So he wouldn't really do a lot of greeting, per se.
No.
All right, that's my idea. But I want, like...
Yeah, 5 to 10% of the take.
I want a little skim here, yeah, absolutely.
Oh, I think
I'm not doing this. I'm not doing this for my health, all right?
Definitely deserves something.
Yeah. Anyway, we'll talk to John Larson a little bit later. Our numbers are 522.
Unless he happens to be listening.
Oh, he's not a big baby. He'll come on. I mean, it's just because I'm embarrassing myself with these ideas doesn't mean... anybody else was necessarily besmirched by them. 522-WTIC, 1-800-966-WTIC, *WTIC. I find that I really am kind of rebelling against having any political conversations with anybody at this point.
It's tough.
I just can't stand it. I'm just really bored by it, and it's just tiresome. And
Tell me, though, when somebody said, you know, when you hear this crap about, well, you know, we all need to get behind the president now, and we all need to just, you know...
No, I can't stand having any conversation like that. That kind either.
I don't want that conversation. I believe what I believe, and that's that. I'm not going to change it around just because somebody happened to be elected. Forget it.
But I really spent the weekend sort of trying to get this stuff out of my system. And I realized that, you know, because I'm not innately connected to people anyway, I mean, I have this whole sort of mild Asperger-ish thing going on. You know, I have this kind of autism spectrum thing. That in a situation like this, I really can get disconnected from people entirely. And I really did. I mean, this weekend I suddenly realized I hadn't really been kind of noticing the human race very much going down the home stretch of this election. I kind of plunged into electoral politics, in which it is possible to be in the presence of a lot of people but be very estranged from them. So I've been looking in people's windows all weekend.
After taking one on the chin at Syracuse, the UConn football Huskies hit the road again for another...
Life's gonna suck when you grow up, when you grow up, when you grow up. Life's gonna suck when you grow up, it sucks pretty bad right now. You're gonna have to mow the lawn, do the dishes, make your bed. You're gonna have to go to school until you're 17.
Seems like a long time, doesn't it? Ha!
You're gonna have to go to war, shoot a gun, kill a nun. You might have to go to war when you get out of school.
Don't worry, it gets worse.
You're gonna have to deal with stress, deal with stress, deal with stress. Your life's gonna be a mess when you get home from the war.
Santa Claus is...
Coward! Come on, let's break the rule and see what happens. Who created that, Bobby?
Yeah.
I think it's
time me, or look at me. I don't care if the whole thing plays.
Next time we have to break the rule and just see what happens. See if we get punished.
What rule?
Well, there's a rule. There's a rule against playing the rest of the song.
There's a rule against it?
Well, it's a rule. I don't know. It's a rule. It's an order from the boss, right?
Oh, okay.
Didn't Janine tell us not to play the rest of the song?
I don't recall.
Yeah, we're not supposed to play the part about Santa Claus and the Easter Bunny.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. We can play the part about killing a nun, but we can't.
That's okay.
We can't play the part about Santa Claus. Go figure. Pressure groups run everything. Well, anyway, if possible, first of all, you know what it's very hip to be right now?
Nope.
An idiot. First there was the Red Sox.
Right.
When they were idiots. Mm-hmm. And then Green Day's new CD, which is a big hit. It's called American Idiot. And then
there's the election.
Well, actually, you think you're kidding, but in fact, according to the current issue of Newsweek, they have sort of details from inside the Kerry campaign, and they say that, first of all, they say that Kerry's active pursuit of John McCain as running mate Well, it says, according to One Piece, Kerry, quote, made an outlandish offer. If McCain said yes, he would expand the role of vice president to include Secretary of Defense and the overall control of foreign policy. When McCain replied, you're out of your mind, Kerry was thwarted and furious about it, asking an intermediary, why the F word didn't he take it? Another article reveals how at one point during the campaign, Kerry says of Bush, I can't believe I'm losing to this idiot.
Well, believe it now.
Yeah. So all I'm saying is, it's very hip to be an idiot. There are other examples of the idiot meme out there right now, but idiocy is momentarily
popular.
Would
you care to share it?
Well, first of all, there's even a collection of writings by three former radical Latin American writers called, I think it's called The Perfect Latin American Idiot. Very hot on Amazon right now. And then there are all those dummies guides. There's dummies guides, but aren't there idiots guides too?
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. I'm telling you, idiocy is very, very popular right now.
It's hip to be an idiot.
It's happening. Okay. It's very of the moment.
Right.
So if you're an idiot, you call 1-800-953-1080. We'll put you to the head of the line. You won't have to wait through the rest of the
But
callers.
You have to admit right
Yeah, you
front.
Have to come on the air and say,
I'm an idiot.
You know, you have to say, I'm Jim the idiot, or I'm Alice the idiot, or whatever your name is. Whatever name you choose to represent yourself as.
So it's going
to
be the idiot hotline?
Yeah, 1-800-953-1080. Special idiot line for now.
Okay. Like there are things that could be said here, but it's probably best we just leave them alone.
With some of our callers, any line they're on is a special idiot line.
Okay.
Joseph calls up, whatever line he's on, that's the idiot line.
Bill in Middletown. Bill?
Yeah, hi, Bruce. Hi, Colin.
Hi.
You know, I've been reading a lot.
Anyway, our numbers are 522-WTIC or 1-800-966-WTIC, *WTIC. And actually, speaking about living in the last times,
yeah,
I'm watching the Stephanopoulos show, and so the Reverend James Dobson comes on.
Oh, God.
And he really is, I don't care who won what election, that guy is a creep. And I can guarantee you that, you know, when George and Laura are snuggling in bed at night, you know, and they're just about to switch out the nightlight, our President Bush says, I hope he gets struck by lightning or something. Man, I hate him. Because, I mean, he is one of these guys who he now thinks, he basically thinks he delivered the White House for Bush. So, first of all, at one point, first of all, he said that he wouldn't accept Alberto Gonzalez as a Supreme Court nominee. Well, that's the president's counsel, you know. That's been his lawyer for a long time, too. But not good enough for Dobson.
What's Dobson got to say about it anyway?
Well,
last I checked, he wasn't in any committee or that's going to be doing any confirmation.
Yeah, actually, yeah, it says a lot. And then Stephanopoulos comes up with this quote that from Dobson recently, where he referred to Pat Leahy as, quote, a hater of God's people. And so he kind of asked him about that. He said, you know, I mean, I can understand why you think that Pat Leahy opposes you on a lot of issues, but is it really fair to call him a hater? And, you know, is that a Christian thing to do? I mean, I don't really see a lot of evidence that he hates anybody. And Dobson just looked at him and said, don't you lecture me about Christian principles.
Oh, yeah, right.
And then finally, they showed, Stephanopoulos showed a clip of George W. Bush saying that he supports civil unions. That, you know, basically, he told Charlie Gibson something to the effect that, you know, he didn't really have a problem with civil unions. And with extending some basic legal rights to gay couples, just not marriage.
Yeah.
And
then he didn't have a problem with it.
Yeah, and then Dobson looks at him and says, well, that's not good. That's not how we feel. And he's, if that's what the president thinks, he's wrong. So take that. Oh, we have an extra minute. No, should we try Emma again? See if we can talk to her? We only have a minute, but.
All right, let's try it.
Hi, Emma.
Hi, can you hear me better?
Much better.
Oh, good. I'm calling from Western Mass, mm-hmm. A lesbian mother of two.
Yeah.
And I.
The person. But I get this email.
Oh, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Are you sure you want to do this?
Yeah. I get this email now from a friend of mine who's going through some changes and it's not somebody I know particularly well, so friend might even be an overstatement, but it's somebody I know, you know. And he says, you know, it seems like a new chapter in my life, and he says, I'm interested in meeting new people and hanging out with new people, and, you know, you might just be the person who can help me with this.
What?
I'm thinking, I'm a social leper. What's the matter? You couldn't reach Ted Kaczynski to help you with your social life? I don't know anybody. I mean, I hang around with Curry.
Person needs some help. Exactly. Person needs some help, they contact you.
Yeah, I mean, really.
Help.
I mean, what should you
do? Do you want to learn to do, like, look at the sidewalk?
Yeah. I have no social skills. I'm like Bobby Fischer without the chess ability. Why would you reach out to me?
Is it because there's nobody else available?
No, I don't think so. I think sometimes people have this idea that because people like you and me work in the media, and so people come in here. I mean, we talked to John Larson on the air, and, you know, and I don't know who else. But, I mean, you know, it might seem like we know a lot of people and we have these really interesting lives.
Uh-huh.
Where
we don't.
We're recluses.
We don't.
And, I mean, it just, you know. I mean, I can't even, I don't even know where to begin.
I'm living in a hotel. Okay. And have been for almost 3 months.
Yeah. I mean, really, I have like the life of Gollum, basically. So.
A hotel.
Yeah.
3 months.
Right.
With cats.
Yeah. And I hang around with Bill Curry.
Well, you just trumped me.
So. Oh. It was just funny. It was funny. I have to say also, I became obsessed with this thing on the computer today. And one of the bad things about computers is, if you're the kind of person like me, who has a little bit of a tendency to sort of see something and then want to see it again immediately, you can. So there was this cartoon, and I sent it to a number of people. I didn't send it to you. I sent it to Helmeck because I thought he would get it.
Send it to me on what?
Well, I don't know how I would send it to you. I would send it to Bobby and tell him to show it to you. But I didn't do that because I didn't think you would think it was funny.
Why?
Well, I just didn't. I mean, I'm the only person around here who I thought would think it was funny was Helmecki.
Oh, okay. Now I see why you didn't send it to me.
But there's this website called Homestar Runner. I guess a lot of young people, I mean, I was just watching it again in the office and James walked in and he knew right away what it was. So I guess younger people all know about this. And I was sort of vaguely aware of Homestar Runner, but I didn't realize how funny it was until today. I got directed to this link there where basically they have these little cartoons and one of the characters is this kind of, I don't know, he's kind of this misanthropic. He's either a robot or a space alien. I'm not really quite sure what. His name is Strong Bad. And he answers all of the email for the website. And so they asked him today the email that he got that was revealed today or the day before or something was about whether he would make a montage. And so he made this montage about a wagon, like a little red wagon full of pancakes. And it just has a red wagon full of pancakes doing all kinds of interesting things. And I don't know why, but I've watched this like thing 8 times now. It's about 3 minutes long. Like an entire half an hour of my day is gone because I've been watching a wagon full of pancakes over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
It's with somebody with my specific neurological problems, it's not good that I can watch something over and over again. Because I tend to want to. I mean, if I like something, I tend to want to watch it over and again to see if I can figure out why I like it.
And you couldn't really explain why you found it funny.
No.
Pancakes.
I sent this to somebody else. I sent this to my friend Maud, who I was pretty sure wouldn't think it was funny. And I appended to it the caveat. Don't watch this if you don't think there's something intrinsically funny about a wagon full of pancakes.
Okay.
Yeah. But I'm just reporting that. But anyway, if you are the kind of person who would find a wagon full of pancakes intrinsically funny, go to homestarrunner.com and then watch today's email. Just go over to the email that they received, basically, and watch that. Our numbers are 522-WTIC, 1-800-966-WTIC, *WTIC. Yeah, I can quickly mention this. They have flu shot vacations now, where you go to Canada. You don't just go to Canada and get a flu shot because it's kind of boring. But you can
book some prescription drugs while you're there, too.
It's like you take a cruise from Seattle to Victoria, get a flu shot the minute you get there, and then, you know, sightsee shop, stuff like that. There's sort of flu shot vacations. There's also a service called the Medicine Express. It runs buses from New York to Canada, so you can get stuff like that. But,
I thought we weren't supposed to use those Canadian drugs because they hadn't been tested and we didn't know for sure if they were safe.
And we're actually having an advertiser called Your Manthrax Tours, where you go up and get vaccinated for anthrax. Well, let's just say you are Royo Gilgrosso, and so the election did not go your way. Still, you can still enjoy sports and the exploits of your favorite football team. Never mind. The time for Sports at Trois, the very French sports discussion segment. Avec Monsieur Ambrosio.
That was good at short notice.
Myself, Louis Gaston de la Mer.
Always go right to the Roy file.
You can always get something out of the Roy Jets
rolling up.
Well, that's where he was. Instead of playing the sports game, he was watching the replay on ESPN.com.
All right, we have to go to Mr. Ambrosio.
Mercifully.
Dear Mr. Ambrosio.
Yeah.
From Sally Bunker, writing from...
Archie's great-granddaughter, I believe.
From Lincoln, Nebraska. She writes...
Lincoln, Nebraska?
Dear Mr. Ambrosio, children in my school are always asking me how bees make honey. Can you explain this? How do they make money?
No, actually, Sally, that's a great question, but as much scientific research has been done on the topic, it is almost impossible to ascertain the pollination process that allows honey to be made by bees. Now, it's only made by the female bee of the species. We know that. We think the male bee has something to do with pollinating the female bee and then the honey being produced from there. But the exact process, we've had several people suffer severe injuries in trying to get close enough to the bees to find out the exact way that the male pollinates the female and then the female produces the honey.
Any idea where the wax comes from?
Between their ears.
Yeah, okay. Pretty much. It's right out of the bee's ears.
Yeah, exactly like with humans. The wax comes from the bee's ears, and then it drips down the hive.
Like a little Q-tip or something?
Oh, no, they're not that. They use antennae of their little ones to clean out the wax from their own ears. So but the pollination process, we can't put a finger on it.
Bee privacy is really the real miracle.
Absolutely.
In New Britain, Jim.
Hey, Colin, Bruce, how you doing?
Fine.
Hey, I just wanted to let you know that in that one-minute segment with Joe D there, where you guys asking the questions,
yes.
I learned more truth than listening to 3 hours of Rush every day.
I think that's very true. No, I think there's sort of a poetic type of truth that's imparted on the Ask Whisperer Radio segment. Although we do encourage people who are like taking their SATs and stuff like that to not necessarily incorporate all of the knowledge that you pick up on Mr. Ambrosio into any kind of thing where your performance is going to be evaluated by some outside party.
Hey, great show.
All right, bye. Occasionally, when there's no one, we can even say that. But occasionally, there are sort of odd correspondences between the answers given by Mr. Ambrosio, but who, by the way, is never given the questions in advance. I mean, he doesn't know what I'm going to... First of all, I picked the questions during the news before the sports segment. And so he has no knowledge of them until I ask. He hears them when you hear them, right? But there are, occasionally there are odd levels of correspondence between Mr. Ambrosio's answer and the actual body of scientific understanding about the subject. It doesn't happen very often, but from time to time it does.
Will we be hearing any science news today?
Yeah, I'm going to try to put together some. We tried to do a little bit of science news. I didn't really find any earlier in the day. There wasn't any that, I mean, it wasn't that there was no science news, but there was very little science news that I particularly cared about.
Yeah.
But I will assemble.
I got one or two little things here.
You have some science news?
Well, this is, it's nothing compared to what you come up with, but I mean, it's something.
So I'll rummage around in some of my regular sources
about this Arctic ice thing.
Arctic ice?
Yeah. Global warming.
Yeah, no,
probably kind of boring stuff, actually.
Well, it could be upsetting. I don't know. It does sound boring, but maybe distressing to our listeners. George Devereaux was talking about?
Yeah.
You don't really know what you're getting here. But with Teresa Bellin, you know you're getting top-of-the-line eggs. Proven eggs.
Yeah, I guess.
I mean, well, the eggs that have already kind of earned their place in the world. All right, do I have
a
science?
They have a track record, is that what
you're saying? Yeah, exactly. Eggs with a track record. I do have some science news.
Okay.
All right. Tons of it.
We'll hear it.
We'll start out with this. Did you know that in Japan, you know how you have to get your house tested for radon and all that kind of stuff? You know, you can't sell your house. It doesn't pass radon test.
Or
in Japan,
mold.
They love radon.
Mold.
Mold, I know mold. But,
you don't mold. Anyway, go ahead.
In Japan, the radon is like the best thing next to aspirin. People do have like radon baths where people, I'm not making this up, where people go to like soak up radon and breathe it in.
I thought it could like hurt you, kill you.
Yeah, well, actually,
make you sick.
In Japan, there are people who think it makes you feel better. And in fact, at the turn of the century, even here, I think radon was in all kinds of things, including toothpaste, beauty creams, and chocolate bars. Nestle's put out radon and raisins.
Radon and raisin.
Yeah, it was very popular. But anyway, it's still in Japan. There are people who sort of think that it's good for them. And, a little radon is a good thing. A little radon every day is a good thing.
Uh-huh.
They actually have radon baths for people to go to. But in fact, scientists even in Japan say this is kind of stupid. Please don't do it.
Yeah.
Now, this is interesting. Bumblebees. We're just talking about bees, Mr. Ambrosio.
Yep.
Turns out the Ohio State University has been experimenting what happens when bees get drunk. And this sounds like something that this is like the kind of thing where you think the kind of person who would do this. honeybees replaced in harnesses made from pieces of drinking straws, and then observed that scientists gave them different doses of ethanol.
You made this up.
From the equivalent of a glass of wine, I don't know what the equivalent is for a honeybee, to several shots of 100% grain alcohol. To the surprise of no one, the bees receiving the most ethanol spent the least time grooming, walking, or flying. Instead, they spent most of the time flipped upside down. They couldn't coordinate their legs well enough to flip them back. They couldn't even get up, according to Julie Mustard, a postdoctoral entomologist and lead author of the report. I am wondering whether it's really immoral to get honeybees drunk against their will.
I think that you've got a point there.
If you start rubbing their fuzzy little bodies and stuff like that while they're drunk, then that's like, you know, it's like date rape or something like that. If you're getting the bees drunk and then you're fooling around with them.
Yeah. You're right.
So anyway,
as usual,
as the bees go, so do we. Many people get aggressive when they're drunk. But I think these bees
I'd be interested in seeing one of those little harnesses myself.
They're puking and crying and feeling sorry.
They put them like on a treadmill too.
Okay, we're going to skip the glow-in-the-dark cats. We'll save that for another day. But this is kind of interesting. There's this a Roman site in historic Scotland. And, you know, they have Roman ruins up there from the Roman occupation.
Yep.
And so, of course, so there, it's been there. It's a 2,000-year-old fort, basically. And it's being devastated now by rabbits. Roman expert from Liverpool University claims rabbits have already devastated important archaeological relics all across Britain. Now it's time, apparently rabbits just hate archaeology. And so they're just taking it apart.
I'd heard that.
You must stabilize what is there and then work to
rabbits
give it.
Rabbits hate archaeology.
The recognition it deserves, says some random British archaeologist. It would be a tragedy to let rabbits destroy thousands of years of history. If these furry creatures are left as custodians of Ardagh Fort, it could eventually become virtually useless as an archaeological site. This really say exactly what the rabbits...
Yeah. How do the rabbits ruin it?
Yeah.
What could they be doing?
I think that they maybe are tunneling underneath it, but I'm not really sure. This is overrun with rabbits. Maybe they're pooping on it. It's not clear to me. This was a line...
That's an astute scientific observation if I've ever seen one.
This is a set of forts or fortresses that kept hordes of marauding ticks at bay. You know,
they can't hold off the rabbits.
But now the rabbits have—they just infested it, and they're continued burrowing. We see the Roman remains collapse and crumble.
God,
but I love it. There ain't nobody here but us chickens. There ain't nobody here at all. You're stomping around and shaking the ground. You're kicking up an awful dust. We chickens trying to sleep. Then you bust in and hobble, 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 hobble with your chin. Tomorrow is a busy day.
See, I'm thinking about reviving my Everything is a Chicken religion. Because, I mean, it might as well.
If moral values and faith and stuff are a key political issue, stuff like that, why not actually have
one? Moral values being a big part of that religion.
Well, I could add moral values to my religion.
Yeah, you can make it up as you go along.
Why not?
I guess you could.
Isn't that what they all do? Isn't that what Buddha did? Isn't that what Jesus did? Isn't that what Muhammad did? I mean, it was like, you know, I mean, every day they'd get up.
Lennon got a little trouble for comparing himself to
I'm not comparing Jesus. Myself. Or saying I'm more popular or anything. I'm just saying every morning those guys got up and they said, I wonder what I should talk about today. Maybe I'll tell a parable. Maybe I'll talk about the Eightfold Path. Maybe I'll do this.
That might be a good feature for the show, the terrible parable.
Yeah, I could tell a little parable, illustrate some kind of moral value. So in other words, what we'd have to do is maybe every day during the day, we'd come up with a principle that needs to be illustrated. Like, don't let no scrub jack your hoopty. You know, and then I would go home and I would think of some parable within the world of Everything is a Chicken.
Right.
Or I could come up with a parable or a parable from real life and then I could try to figure out what it illustrates. Now, here's a chicken-related parable for you right now.
A chicken-related parable?
Yeah.
Oh, is that why we played that?
No, as a matter of fact, he played that and I thought, I wonder if there's anything going on with chicken.
Oh, quickly, so you jump right into
did a little research.
Into the chicken.
And what I found is that one of the largest chicken farms in Europe, this is not a particularly happy story. One of the largest chicken farms in Europe plans to open a crocodile farm next door to get rid of unwanted chickens. The farm in South Moravia, Czech Republic, sells about 10 million chickens every year, but also has to dispose of 50,000 underweight ones that nobody wants.
Why not?
They don't want it?
Yeah.
They're too scrawny.
Well, so eat two.
Well, that's just not the way things are. They want a big plump chicken. So a farm spokesman said, we plan to breed 1,000 crocodiles to sell for their leather, which can fetch up the... I tell them from reading the New York Times article about the crocodiles in China that crocodiles are not going to like it in South Moravia, Czech Republic. Because I told you, they did that story about how in China they were bringing crocodiles in from Thailand or someplace like that,
mm-hmm.
thinking exactly the same thing.
But
they were
going to
make a small fortune... making with out of crocodile leather and crocodile meat and
crocodile rock.
Yeah. And instead, the crocodiles, it was like cold and the crocodiles wouldn't screw and they didn't do anything they were supposed to do and they died and they didn't have other crocodiles and at one point, this Chinese guy was describing how he had to go around. And then they had to give them antibiotics. Because they all had colds in their little crocodile snouts.
Well, that happens.
Yeah.
Probably didn't get any flu shots either.
No. I don't feel well myself,
crocodile
actually.
Flu shots.
I have not been sick for the last two or three years, but I've been almost sick. You know that feeling where you're almost sick? You're not quite
flirting
sick.
With sickness.
Flirting with sickness.
What sickness would you be flirting with?
I don't know. I know I can feel that I'm not myself. I don't have my usual compliment.
Time for the soup of life, perhaps?
I think it might be time for the soup of life. Although not tonight, because in fact tonight I'm having dinner with a college roommate I haven't seen since 1976.
Scott?
Not Scott, no. Scott
was
last year. This is somebody I literally have not seen since 1976. And I'm feeling a little vulnerable because I was realizing I've kind of gone downhill a little bit since 1976.
Oh, I don't think so.
I was pretty cute in 1976, but I mean, I've even gone downhill a lot in the last week. So, anyway, back to the chickens. A farm spokesman said we plan to breed 1,000 crocodiles to sell for their leather, which can set us fetch up to 350 euros per square meter,
mm-hmm.
and we will also save a small fortune on our chicken disposal costs. But they think they're so smart now.
Yeah.
I can almost guarantee you this won't
work. The cycle is not going to be completed.
So it'll turn out that the crocodiles don't like chicken.
Yep.
Because, in fact, crocodiles taste like chicken, so they probably don't like chicken. They probably like something else. And then the crocodiles will get sick because they don't like Czechoslovakia either, or Czech Republic, or wherever they are.
Mm-hmm.
And then they'll become listless and lethargic.
And die.
And die without ever having sex.
Yep, another sad story.
Yep. So anyway, that's that. We have some real excitement today because we have the acting governor of the state of Connecticut, Kevin Sullivan, joining us today. He has temporarily seized power from the ruthless...
Oh, wait, just because she's on vacation,
she's on
right?
vacation, yeah.
Well, she's on vacation. That doesn't mean he seizes power, does it?
Well, he's running the state.
Well, yeah, but, I mean, she's not incapacitated or anything. She's just on vacation.
No, but he's running the state.
Or he just decides when he wants to run the state?
Well, no, she's not here, so he's running the state. So
well, what do you mean, run the state? I mean, what do you, sit in the office and just say, I'm running the state?
I don't probably
agree
about this. I'm very vulnerable. I have to have dinner with somebody I haven't seen since 1976.
Well, that's not my problem. You set that up.
You could ask him what it's like to run the state. Or whether he is running the state. But he is running the state. So it's in the paper today. Since he's running the state.
Well, okay.
Yes, he's running the state.
So what would that entail?
Well, I think, basically...
Pretty much nothing.
Well, he's flogging infidels.
So you think it's like, while Jody's away...
Well, here's the thing.
Kevin will play.
I think she's away because something's going wrong. And you know what she loves to say is, didn't happen on my watch. So probably, it probably turns out that Moustawi or somebody is in Connecticut right now with a Connecticut driver's license. You know, it probably means that every major terrorist in the world, you know, has gotten through DMV in the last 3 or 4 days. And so she's like on vacation, so it'll be Kevin's problem. She can say, that happened when Kevin was running the state. It happened on my watch. I have this whole theory, anyway, as you know, and I actually have now some small-minded research today to back myself up on this, and that is this.
So you come up with a twisted premise, and then you find
small-minded research
to support the twisted premise.
And my theory is that there's never been a governor of Connecticut who's been so in touch with his or her emotions as is M. Jody Rell, our current acting governor. Actually, if she's our acting governor, is she our acting governor? That would make Kevin our acting.
No, I don't think she's acting. I think she's
the governor.
Okay.
She's not an interim governor. She's just governor?
I don't think so.
Okay, fine.
She's my governor.
Yeah, she's my governor, too. I acknowledge her as my governor.
Yeah. We're going to work harmoniously with Jody Rouse.
I've accepted her as my personal governor.
Yeah.
Okay, well, anyway, basically, whatever happens, she just has sort of an emotive response towards it. And by the way, I think that's very effective politics, because she also kind of approximates the neural pathways of the average person who's receiving this information, too. So, for example, as regards our scummy DOT, Department of Transportation, she has a press release that came out, I think, yesterday, although she's not here, but her press operation continues to make press releases. I know you share my sense of frustration, she says, about the recent allegations of improprieties surrounding contracting in the Department of Transportation. This, by the way, would involve the crack sealing unit of the Department of Transportation, the ones who've most recently been alleged to...
Crack sealing operations division the other day working.
Yeah.
They're sealing up some cracks.
Were they doing a good job?
Boy, I tell you, it was sparkling.
Yeah.
You know, there's nothing like whipping along the highway and all of a sudden there's a truck right in the middle of the road with a couple of guys and they're sealing cracks.
Well, all I can say is that just didn't happen all by itself. It took a lot of free meals and trips to strip clubs to make that whole operation happen.
Well, that's kind of what I thought. You know, as I was looking at it, I thought, you know, all bad.
But there's no indication that they're not doing a good job of crack sealing, is there?
No.
I'm
not a crack sealing expert.
No.
Okay, I have never done it for a living or anything like that, but it did look to me like they were really performing the task well.
But, I mean, that's certainly an open question anyway, and we'd just like to ask all of our listeners, if you have any doubts about this or anything you'd like to contribute, you know, inspect your own cracks, you know, you're in your driveway or whatever, and then look at the ones in the state roads and see whether, in fact, there's a difference.
Perhaps if you've seen, the crack sealing operation going on, and there's somebody you'd like to salute, why not call up?
This one's for you, crack sealer.
Yep.
Well, anyway.
Maybe you might want to, next time you see them sealing cracks, you might want to stop and just ask them their names and maybe jot them down so that you could give them ample recognition individually.
But if you were, if you're at home in your driveway, expect your own, look at your own cracks, and then see.
Probably seal your own cracks at home, right?
Yeah. See how they stand up or measure up against the ones in the roads. Anyway,
the problem.
I know you share my sense of frustration, says the governor, about recent allegations of improprieties. It is painfully clear, however, that the current decentralized system. Okay. So, sense of frustration, painfully clear. Okay. Here's a speech she gave on October 14th. I was personally devastated, disappointed, disillusioned by Governor Rowland. I was awed by the task that lay before me. That's October 14th. October 28th, press release. Stonewalling the auditors would be unacceptable in any state agency. To hear allegations that it happened in the Ethics Commission, of all places, is simply shocking.
Shocking.
Yeah.
Surprised you didn't use shocking with that in reference to Governor Rowland.
November 11th.
Shocking to everybody else.
All of my investigations into her emotional states, by the way, take place over the course of less than a month time, less than 30 days times. I was truly heartened by the number of people voting Tuesday.
That's good, heartened.
October 22nd, the report from the auditors is profoundly troubling. The findings suggest a pattern of deceptions. While these abuses did not occur on my watch, and this is more DOT stuff, no one can be happy with a situation such as this. I would include her. She's not happy.
Were any cracks sealed on her watch?
Unclear. And then October 13th, talking about... this is a pretty good one because it's about something that hasn't happened yet. She even gets into certain moods about things that haven't happened. And this was about price gougers profiteering from flu shots. She says, anyone who would attempt to profit from this shortage is beneath contempt. I cannot conceive of anyone greedy enough or depraved enough to sell this medicine at exorbitant prices, but that's what's been reported in other parts of the country. Won't stand for it.
Can't imagine it.
Yeah.
Yeah, well...
So, my point is...
Get used to it.
Meanwhile, I was reading Acting Governor Kevin's comments today about the DMV fiasco.
Right, and what did he... I'll bet he put... Is he ruling with an iron fist?
He had no particular mood whatsoever about
that.
He just sort of said that, it was happening. He didn't... Something ought to be done about it. But he didn't actually describe his own emotional state. So I think there should be a Department of Moods.
We need another state agency.
And they would be in charge of figuring out what kind of mood the governor and various other people in state government were in.
They could have like one of those fire danger things, like low, high, moderate.
They would issue periodic bulletins.
Yeah, right.
And they would also take the responsibility off of the shoulders of the governor, knowing what kind of mood she's in.
Yeah.
She could be freed up to do other things.
Yeah.
pretty much all she does right now, as far as I can tell, is tell us what her emotional state is. I think she should be free to do other things.
Summer is over. It's back.
You think of that license thing, you know, you could get like, it's $2,000 for one license. Maybe you could get like for, you know, $39.50 or something, you'd get two. You know, I'd give you a little kind of a little knockoff on two licenses.
They might be willing to cut you a deal.
Yeah.
You have to have your
discount kind of thing.
What you do is you have your coyote. That's the one that you have them negotiate for you. Have the coyote negotiate. But I love the fact, I mean, there's so many things to say about this, and some of this is what we're going to address with acting Governor Kevin Sullivan. But it looks as though they were alerted to this more than a year ago by some tile setter in Florida who suddenly discovered that, like, all these Guatemalan guys and his crew had Connecticut driver's license. Well, that's right. We used to live up in Litchfield, actually. So he writes a letter to the DMV saying, you know, well, I've been asking around, and you're like a destination, basically, for anybody who wants an illegal driver.
See, there's another tourism angle there, though. You know, you had that Arafat thing going earlier, and now, you know, Connecticut,
the driver's license state. So then they really swung into action, and I guess like months later they actually called the guy in Florida to ask him a little bit about this. Yeah, and then you know, I mean, meanwhile, the whole thing started more than a year ago, and this is not a complicated thing. This is not like breaking up the Medellin drug cartel, you know? I mean, it wouldn't be too hard to figure out whether the people are illegally selling driver's licenses in the DMV, but somehow... The combined efforts of the state police and the Homeland Security Office of the United States have not cracked open this ruthless ring of driver's license issuers. Numbers are 522-WTIC or 1-800-966-WTIC. Star WTIC if you have a cell phone. You know how they keep saying, like, Arafat's like in a deep coma, or he's dead, or he's in a...
Yeah.
You know. Well, I mean, I get kind of interested in this, and basically sort of, what would be the difference between, say, a deep coma, which Arafat is said to be in,
right,
and say a shallow coma, which is like Mikey C, maybe. Now it turns out this next thing is going to sound like something that I made up, but I didn't. For people with impaired cognitive functioning, there are various scales that they use, you know, to measure like how impaired you are.
Right.
But one of the most popular ones, believe it or not, is called the Rancho Los Amigos scale. That's really what it's called. And it's at 10 levels of cognitive functioning. But number one, you're just a rutabaga, basically, you know?
Uh-huh.
It's just turnip time. And then all the way up to 10. I don't, even though this is a scale of cognitive impairment, I don't even think I'm a 10 on the cognitive impairment scale. I think I'm maybe a 9. 9 says, let's see, 10, I mean, the title for 10 is purposeful, appropriate, modified, independent. I don't even think I'm that. Although some of it describes me perfectly.
Let's hear number 9.
Number 9 is, let's see, independently shifts back and forth between tasks and completes them accurately for at least 2 consecutive hours. Well, I can usually almost do this show, which is 3 hours.
Yeah.
Acknowledges...
Which basically boils down to like 26 minutes.
Accurately estimates abilities but requires standby assistance to adjust task demands. Able to think about consequences of decisions or actions with assistance when requested.
No, that's not you.
There's some areas where I'm already feeling. Here's another one. Acknowledges others' needs and feelings and responds appropriately with standby assistance. No. Depression may continue.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe easily irritable. May have low frustration tolerance. Able to self-monitor appropriateness of social interaction?
No.
All right. We have to drop down to 8 then. Okay, depressed, irritable, low frustration tolerance, easily angered, argumentative, self-centered, uncharacteristically dependent or independent, able to recognize or acknowledge inappropriate social action.
Yeah, some of those you do. Some.
I think I might be an 8. 8 is purposeful, appropriate, standby assistance. Consistently oriented to person, place, and time, independently attends to and completes familiar tasks for 1 hour in distracting environments, able to recall and integrate past and recent events, uses assistive memory devices to recall daily schedule, to-do lists, and record critical information. I can basically do that. aware of and acknowledges impairments and disabilities when they interfere with task completion but requires standby assistance to take appropriate. Yeah, I think I'm about an 8.
Okay. Yeah. We can go with an 8.
Yeah.
And so that kind of, you're kind of like flirting with a 9.
Yeah, I could almost, with a little bit of help and perhaps some drugs or something, I could probably get up to 9. But anyway, that's the, in case you're interested in sort of where you fit in, it's the Rancho Los Amigos.
Right.
And you can just Google that and you can get it. And I found it on a website called neuroskills.com. Anyway, back to our hideously corrupt state government. Did you read the Sunday article about the Ethics Commission?
No. No.
I've concluded that Alan Klofsky's biggest problem is he's really kind of a butthead. You know, I mean, obviously this sort of now is translated into, I mean, if in fact they are like keeping double sets of timesheets and stuff like that. But the other thing is, I'm fascinated now by the mysterious parking lot attendant who's the, you know, I don't think this is really a parking lot attendant. And this article kind of suggested that. Because, you know, supposedly the whole Ethics Commission thing kind of went kablooey because this letter went out. Although, interestingly also, it went out to the home and business addresses of the actual ethics commissioners, the politically appointed ethics commissioners. Well, what parking lot attendant is going to go look that stuff up?
You wouldn't think that'd be the case.
And he was a parking lot attendant, or she was a parking lot attendant, and said that...
You don't see a lot of, like, parking lot attendants with a really well-kept Rolodex, for example.
Yeah, and then the parking lot attendant also seemed to know, like, all kinds of things that were going on inside the building. Like, you know, there were time-off sheets up on the refrigerator and stuff like that.
Might be a parking lot attendant, but more than likely probably somebody working undercover.
This is like the Hercule Poirot of parking lot attendants. This is just some random parking lot attendant who suddenly, you know, began to notice that their cars weren't around all that much and stuff like that and got kind of interested. This is like, you know, the Angela Lansbury, you know, Murder, She Wrote parking attendant, basically.
Yeah.
Like, going up there nosing around.
Yep.
Up there with a flashlight, poking around in the Ethics Commission offices, trying to gather information. And I'm not buying it. I think it's somebody inside. Mm. Somebody who hated Alan. But, I mean, it really, you know, I don't know. Actually, the more that I was reading about Alan Klofsky in this highly damning article about him, the more he kind of reminded me of me in certain ways, including he was one point was describing the ethics commissioners, the politically appointed commission, to which he served as really sort of chief of staff, and I believe his quote was something like, "Could I possibly hate these people more?" Which is something I could picture myself saying in these circumstances.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
But anyway, it sounds like they didn't work very hard. And, I mean, you certainly wouldn't know that because we haven't any major ethical problems here in the state of Connecticut. It doesn't seem like a place where the Ethics Commission has been asleep at the switch for long periods of time. Now, does it?
We don't have.
No, I'm just kidding. We have Ethics Commission. I mean, it really is.
Okay.
I was just going over in my mind, and this is not even counting stuff like the Anaskovich thing, which I don't think we're even remotely through with. But I was just sort of going over all of the things that are sort of developing right now. I mean, as far as I can tell, there are like maybe two different parallel, not even counting, see, you can't even, it's hard to even put any kind of rubric around this, but I was going to say not even counting all the Tomasa stuff and buildings that they built and stuff like that. But like within DOT, I think there's a crack ceiling, you know, Fox. By the way, you know, if
this
you're going
to... not to be confused, by the way, with a glass ceiling.
No.
That's a whole different thing. This is crack ceiling, isn't filling up the cracks.
Let me just say something to you crack ceiling people there at DOT.
I wish you would.
You know, if you're going to take things from contractors, you know, it's one thing to take meals and stuff like that, but, you know, or, you know, other kinds of gifts and blandishments. But, because you could always sort of say, well, I don't know, we were at the lunch with them to talk crack ceiling, you know, and
we're talking
they picked
crack.
Up the check. We weren't even paying attention. They picked up the check. You know, or who knows? But if you're going to take limo rides to Rhode Island strip clubs called the Foxy Lace, and there's just no way you're ever going to be able to put some kind of acceptable gloss over that.
A little tough spin in that one.
Yeah, I mean, just don't, you know what, go to the strip club on your own nickel. I mean, it's not like strip clubs are really expensive to go to anyway. I mean, it's not even a good allocation of your bribery intake. I mean, unless you really are relishing that limo.
They're not shooting high enough.
Yeah, or exactly. You know, in other words, if you're going to get bribed, make them take you out to Ruth Chris, you know, for a dinner that's going to cost you $125 or something. Mm-hmm. And then go to the strip club where you're going to spend, you know, even with tips and stuff like that, you're not going to spend that much money.
But apparently they really wanted that limo ride to the really sort of primo Rhode Island, Providence, Rhode Island strip club. Who knows why. But anyway. So we had the crack ceiling problem, but I think there was also another problem.
It might be an Arnold Dean possibility there with a bus.
Yeah, like a little, like a like a special tour?
Yeah, well. Didn't he take a bus to, like, Fenway or something? Or
yeah, that
no, he went to the casino. That's what it was.
Two people to the casino. Yeah. Maybe the Foxy Lady's next. Yeah.
Go to the Foxy Lady with Dean.
Yeah. And judging from the people who went on the Fenway Park bus trip, they would be happier going to see a place where there are actual foxes running around. So the crack ceiling people, and then there's like this kind of Bureau of Public Transportation. I think there's like a separate problem with the public transportation thing. That's my dim recollection anyway. Then you got the Ethics Commission. That's a sewer. Then you've got the, the DMV, as it turns out. DMV's got problems with the licensing, which you can buy, and then there have been multitudinous problems with the emissions inspections. Public Works, well, Fleming's kind of straightening that out now, but that place was a mess.
You know what they need?
What?
Bureau of Corruption.
I think we have
another state agency to handle all of the corruption things that are going on.
We had a Bureau of Corruption. Actually, I was noticing today that Jody has this thing called Project ELF, which is something about, I think, getting presidents and stuff over to service people overseas or something. As this thing from Project Elif, which was more like getting presidents to government officials from contractors. Yes. Oh, I'm getting a little whisper in my headphones. I missed the time. We have to go. We'll take a break. We'll be back.
Don't
automatically.
Don't even say that.
Long Island's down on fire anyway, so.
Don't even make that comment.
It'll
because
be Gina's
you know.
First job, basically. Rescue as many flaming muscles as she possibly can.
Firefighting lesson.
Oh. I don't like the looks of that, do you?
Well, it's this natural gas thing? No.
It just, to me, you know what? It has like Irwin Allen disaster movie written all over it, doesn't it?
the towering clam.
Yeah, you could revive O.J. Simpson's acting career or something, because I mean, this. It just seems like such a bad idea. I'm sure it's visionary. I'm sure it's ahead of its time. This is a two energy company. They want to put a floating fuel terminal on Long Island Sound. It'll get natural gas from barges and then pump it down into an existing gas pipeline under the Sound.
Is it floating so that we can kind of move it around so everybody shares in the good
danger?
Yeah.
Like Madison's turn to have it today or something.
They have like a reverse lottery, you know.
All I know is I was surprised to see that occasional Bruce McCollum Show environmental correspondent Kiki Kennedy appeared to be a little soft on this thing. She was sort of saying, well, maybe there are some, I think she said, like, maybe there are some worse things. Yeah, I suppose.
Yeah.
I mean, I suppose the airborne plutonium drop would be worse. I'm sure we could come up with a list of, like, worse ideas than this, but that doesn't mean this is a good idea. And not only that, but it just goes to prove that once they get these other things down there, they just think they can get anything. I mean, there really is a camel's nose under the tent or a dolphin's nose under the reef or something. Because, I mean, basically, you know, I mean, we were just talking about cables a little while ago, and that was distressing enough. But this really does look like such an awful idea. It's like a much more explosive version of the Valdez. But anyway, I believe Kiki is
just what you need.
Yeah, I believe Kiki is quoted in kind of a soft way. Actually, I prefer Barbara Gordon is somebody I've known for years, and I just saw her on election night for the first time in a long time. Mansion.
Right.
Yeah. No, I don't think it is our job. My feeling is no.
You know what else?
What?
If you got this thing floating around, it's going to get a lot of attention, and then it will draw attention away from your excellent idea, that Arafat thing, down at, Foxwoods last I knew, or Mystic, okay, yeah. and that'll draw attention away from that.
The body of Arafat, Well, people will be afraid to go look at it, because they're pretty, they get blown up by this. That'll be good for tourism. Unstable, highly flammable thing out in the middle of Long Island Sound.
Sure.
It'll be like the Cuyahoga River, writ large. Anyway, so we have many things to talk about today, and we also have, coming on the show, we have Miles Rappaport. If Kevin had done that, Roland would have been over a lot sooner, and Kevin would be a much bigger political figure.
Oh, I don't think that's fair of you to say. I mean, they brought him down in 7 or 8 years.
Yeah.
Come on.
And really, you know, the only person, the only Democratic politician with any appetite for doing that was Curry. I mean, you know, Kevin didn't want to do it. Blumenthal had a limited interest in doing it. Bicewicz, you know, when Roland was just hemorrhaging blood, Bicewicz finally screwed up her courage and went on Sam Ginger Ellis show at the crack of dawn.
It wasn't even the crack of dawn. It was in the middle of the night.
Really, you know, something that, you know, a show that was heard by nocturnal animals.
We were on 28 watts when that show came on.
So, you know, that was her contribution.
Whip antenna we hooked
yeah.
up.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, in point of fact, Curry was the only person who really did have any appetite for this. And this is all going to come racing back to us tonight when we see the La Cage au Hot Tub version of this on Law and Order. When we saw this. And we'll be talking to the guy who wrote this screenplay at the end of
Ross.
The show.
Ross
Berger. Berger, is that his name? Bergen?
Berger.
No way to kill Jackson Brown, is there? He's like the vampire of singer-songwriting.
You don't like Jackson Brown?
Well, you know, actually...
You don't like anybody.
When I was in college, I really did like Jackson Brown a lot.
You don't like Al Stewart? You don't like Jackson Brown?
And I don't like Jimmy Buffett.
You don't like
yeah.
Jimmy
you know,
Buffett.
I don't really like... I don't dislike Jackson
but
Brown.
But you hate Kenny Chesney, too, huh?
I hate Kenny Chesney's just fine. I don't really know who he is. But I did watch a little... I watched several minutes of the Country Music Awards last night.
Just because you predicted Kenny would win, he did.
I did. And then I did get to see Alison Krauss do that Whiskey Lullaby thing, which mm-hmm. I think is a very nice song.
Yep. I know the song. I didn't see that.
I don't know. It fits in with Alison's overall Christian vibe, but I guess God loves whiskey, too.
God's been doing some strange things the last few weeks.
Right. Maybe God's been drinking. Maybe that explains it. Maybe God's got a problem.
Yeah, that's good. That we needed.
That would explain everything, really.
Yeah.
He's hitting the bottle. Oh, no, I've lost. That's going to get the switchboard going.
It's going to be interesting. Never mind. I don't.
There was this really the most out of your documents. Your.
Hey there, children. Johnny Walker here. This song is about the colors in the rainbow. Of the Homeland Security Threat Level System. The first color, green, means there's no threat of terror. And guess what? It's never been used. The next threat level is a general risk. So be generally afraid when it's blue. And then there's yellow, and that's elevated. So look for explosives and shoes. Orange is high, so buy plastic and duct tape. And red means we're all really screwed. So those are the colors in the threat level rainbow. They tell us what's happening outside. Rainbows are also in cereal boxes, or they give us a sense of gay pride. Perhaps someday we can look at a rainbow without feeling so afraid. And then when the storm clouds